Good afternoon from USC's Annenberg Media Center, and welcome to From Where We Are from Annenberg Radio News. For Tuesday, October 31st, 2017, I'm Charlotte Kim. First, a news update with Sam Newman.
New York police say a 29-year-old man drove a truck onto a lower Manhattan sidewalk earlier this afternoon, killing at least 8 people and injuring 15 others. The suspect allegedly drove his rental truck for 20 blocks down a bike path along the Hudson River. He hit pedestrians and bicyclists before crashing into a school bus near the World Trade Center. The driver then reportedly exited the vehicle with paintball and pellet guns in his hands, leading police to fire their guns. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio called the incident an act of terror.
Let me be clear that based on the information we have at this moment, this was an act of terror and a particularly cowardly act of terror aimed at innocent civilians, aimed at people going about their lives who had no idea what was about to hit them.
The driver was shot several times and is being treated at a nearby hospital. The police commissioner says the method of attack and statements made by the terrorist are what led them to label it a terrorist incident. Utah police say they've arrested a man wanted in a fatal carjacking near the University of Utah and in a Colorado homicide. 24-year-old Austin Boutin turned himself in following an overnight manhunt. Boutin was wanted in connection to the death of a student from China who was found shot in his car near campus. The suspect was also wanted for questioning in the death of a 63-year-old man in Golden, Colorado. Controversial far-right figure Milo Yiannopoulos will speak at Cal State Fullerton this evening as part of his Troll Academy tour. Annenberg Media's Katya Jordan is at the university where students are protesting before the event. Katya?
Hello, I'm Katya Jordan from Annenberg Media, and it's 2 hours away from the campus appearance with Milo Yiannopoulos. He's a controversial alt-right member. They're expecting 800 guests to come. Currently, I spoke to USC students, UCLA students, about his perspective, and they said,
"Look, students have a right to drive fascists off of campus. We're not just saying that we have to ignore them. We're not saying that they can get a right to speak based on their free speech, but we're saying these people are spewing poison. These ideas are poisonous, and they're backed up by the state right now, including the police and the armed forces. They already have all the power. It's not like we're feeding into giving them any sort of further platform by protesting.
We're all engaging, we're all talking together, and we're learning on what ways that we could help each other. Just because this crazy maniac is going to be speaking, we're not going to give them all that power."
Cal State Fullerton alumna Helen Figueroa says she supports Milo Yiannopoulos and wants to hear him out more.
I like the fact that he says what he is on his mind. Unfortunately, it irks a lot of people, good and bad. I can't say I would agree with everything because I haven't heard him out 100%, but that's why I want to come here and hear him out.
As of right now, there are not too many people protesting. It's more people just gathering in a unity block party to counter this event. They all say that they promote happiness and peacefulness, and instead of really promoting the violence and the different things that Yiannopoulos promotes, they're making sure that it's all about peace. So right now, everything is really controlled, and we don't see any type of violence or protesters, no chants, nothing. There are police roaming around, but that is about it. And I'm Katya Jordan from USC Annenberg Media.
Thank you, Katya. Netflix has suspended production on the 6th and final season of House of Cards. This follows accusations of sexual misconduct against its star, Kevin Spacey. Just yesterday, the streaming service announced that the next season of the hit show would be its last. Spacey was accused of making a pass at actor Anthony Rapp in the 1980s when Rapp was only 14 years old. Spacey wrote a letter in which he apologizes for the incident and announces that he is gay. Some have accused the actor of using his coming out as a justification for his misconduct. Cloudy skies will continue into the evening tonight as light rain is possible. Temperatures will remain in the low 60s overnight. Tomorrow, cloud cover will dominate the day and more rain is possible overnight and into Thursday. Temperatures will reach a high of 69 degrees. The Senate Judiciary Committee held a hearing today where tech executives testified about Russian advertising on social media platforms during the 2016 election. Nuran Salahie has the story.
The subcommittee will come to order.
Facebook, Google, and Twitter representatives appeared before Congress to answer questions on Russian involvement in the 2016 presidential election. The three companies were asked about the volume and content of Russian ads and how the companies respond.
And there is no place on Facebook for terrorism or hate.
That's Facebook's representative, Colin Stretch.
The activity really appears to address a wide range of hot-button topics and appears directed at fomenting discord and inflaming discourse.
But some ads did clearly target specific candidates. Democratic Senator Christopher Coons of Delaware showed a Russian-backed ad that went after Hillary Clinton that appeared to be from military veterans in Texas. USC computer science professor Yelena Mirkovic says online advertising typically targets users with specific interests.
The real problem that arises here is more from the how these ads interact with the psychology of the users. If you already have certain beliefs and now you see an ad that confirms those beliefs, it's very impressionable.
Facebook is promising to do better, but Republican John Kennedy of Louisiana expressed doubt about their ability to know their advertisers.
5 million advertisers? And you're going to tell me that you're able to trace the origin of all of those advertisements?
Going forward, all three companies vowed to continue investigating the ads and implementing new measures to try to prevent future fake advertising by a foreign entity. For Annenberg Media, I'm Nuran Salahieh.
Gas prices in Los Angeles will go up 12 cents this month as a new statewide tax begins to take effect. The tax was signed in April by Governor Jerry Brown. It will go toward fixing the state's highways and local roads. This month's increase will not be the last as a result of the bill. In 2020, the tax will be increased by 7.5 cents. Construction is due to begin in summer 2018. Tonight is Game 6 of the World Series between the LA Dodgers and Houston Astros. In the first 5 games, the series has already seen the most home runs in World Series history. Reporter Brian Vogt-Nielsen has more on tonight's ballgame.
The Astros are up 3-2 on the Dodgers, meaning it's win or go home for the boys in blue. Pitcher Rich Hill will take the mound for the Dodgers, while the Astros will start Justin Verlander, who has yet to lose a game this postseason. It's been a hitter's series so far, as the two ball clubs have combined for 22 home runs, already the most in a World Series ever. Verlander says one reason for the spike in the home runs is from a difference in the ball being used this series. He says the ball is more slick than normal. USC pitcher John Thomas explains why the condition of the ball might be the cause of this home run derby.
If it's slick, it kind of makes the pitcher shy away from throwing off-speed pitches because the grip isn't as good, so they have to throw fastballs, which are easier to hit, especially if you're sitting fastball. A big league hitter can hit any fastball if that's what he's sitting on.
USC students have mixed feelings about the record-setting home run series.
I just love seeing my boys swinging for the fences. That really gets me going, and it's more fun to watch, I think.
From a fan standpoint, you know, offense is pretty cool in a game, but I don't like how there's such a huge difference in the offense.
It's the same ball for both teams. So if there's going to be a lot of home runs, well, just got to keep up.
For Annenberg Media, I'm Brian Vogt-Nielsen.
Following the terrorist attack in New York City this afternoon, the LA County Sheriff's Department says it will increase security for trick-or-treaters tonight. Ariel 2 visited a costume shop in West Hollywood to find out this year's most popular costume.
At Spirit Halloween on Santa Monica Boulevard earlier today, you had to wait in line to pay for your costume. Store employee Andrew Ramirez is busy working the fitting rooms to help customers who are looking for a last-minute Halloween costume. She certainly knows what the most popular costumes are.
Hocus Pocus, Wonder Woman, Batman, Ghostbusters, and Stranger Things.
Google Trends show that the top 3 costumes nationwide are Wonder Woman, Harley Quinn, and clowns. The most popular character varies from city to city, but in the 2 biggest cities, New York and Los Angeles, there is a high chance people will see Wonder Woman on the street, and one of them could be Ashlyn Rawls.
Yeah, there's actually a lot this year. Normally I go for a costume that's like not as common, but this year I just had to do Wonder Woman.
Rawls and her friend Jordan were shopping in the store late this morning. We asked them why they didn't just buy online.
I was looking, but I barely started yesterday, and then it said they won't get here until tomorrow. So I was like, crap, I gotta like run to the store real quick.
I got it from Hustlers Hollywood. I went shopping there. I was gonna buy it there, but they were sold out of smalls. They only had large, so I went online.
The National Retail Federation says 22% of consumers bought their costumes online. Overall, NRF estimates that Americans will spend more than $9.1 million on Halloween. For Annenberg Media, I'm Ariel Tu.
It's 10 minutes after the hour. I'm Sam Newman.
Thanks, Sam. Coming up on From Where We Are, USC Provost and student governments partnered together to implement safety guidelines in light of a sexual harassment case. A recent sexual harassment case is creating dialogue on campus about what will be done to ensure the future of student safety. Leslie Ombres has more on this story.
USC plans to implement guidelines in response to a student's lawsuit against a school and an associate professor she is accused of sexually harassing her. In a memo released on Sunday night, USC Provost Michael Quick said the school plans to partner with student governments to find a solution.
Our community wants to be engaged. We want to be better. We want to figure these things out. So, we will. We'll get to work on this and have impact.
The doctoral graduate student at the USC School of Social Work who filed the lawsuit is Carissa Fenwick. She says more student involvement is needed in dealing with issues of sexual harassment.
And I do wish that once the investigation was concluded, that there would have been more input, just more input from the community about what the sanctions should be.
In the lawsuit, Fenwick alleges that she was sexually harassed by a USC associate professor at a conference in New Orleans. The professor, Eric Guerrero, has denied the allegations. Fenwick filed a report with the USC Office of Equity and Diversity 7 days after the incident. She says it took too long for the university to take action.
It was like 5 months of just having no idea what the outcome was going to be.
Some of Fenwick's colleagues are standing in solidarity with her and working with the School of Social Work to find an equitable solution.
We support her, we believe her, and we validate her experiences and experiences of other people that have gone through similar things and other survivors.
Robin Petering is a doctoral graduate student at the USC School of Social Work. In his memo, USC Provost Michael Quick says we must work together as a community to model the right way to behave, support, respect, and value each person. For Annenberg Media, I'm Leslie Ambrise.
Hollywood is abuzz with accusations of sexual misconduct against powerful stars years later. Often, it takes a long time for alleged victims to come forward because of legal settlements paid to them by these stars. Ryan Temple reports.
Hush money might be running out. On Sunday, BuzzFeed News reported sexual assault allegations against Kevin Spacey, made by actor Anthony Rapp, known for his role in Rent. This publication, years after the alleged crimes against then-14-year-old Rapp, comes after weeks of heat in Hollywood. Dozens of women have come forward to accuse Hollywood powerhouse Harvey Weinstein of sexual assault and misconduct. The allegations date back decades, much like Rapp's story. As more alleged victims come forward, one question has popped up. Why did it take so long to hear their stories? Lincoln Banlow, partner at the Fox Rothschild Law Firm, said people are coming forward now because their careers aren't in danger. 20 years ago, that could have been a different story.
People doing the conduct get a little less powerful in the industry, and those actors, actresses that were subjected to this kind of treatment get a little more stature, a little more power, and finally realize that speaking up is not going to cost them their career.
Banlow said for years these settlements were easy ways to make legal cases go away.
Typically, the primary way people can show some indication towards resolving a case is through money.
He says confidentiality clauses also kept people quiet for some time. According to the lawyer, this is generally standard in settlement agreements, and the consequences for breaking them vary.
It might have an amount that the accused is paying the accuser, and the confidentiality clause says if you reveal anything about this litigation, you have to pay that back. Sometimes there's really no teeth to a confidentiality clause.
Above all, Banlow thinks now could just be a tipping point after decades of inappropriate behavior.
There tends to just be moments where an issue becomes a hot button issue that flips. And this might be the time for that.
Banlow predicts a flood of more sexual harassment allegations as these stories continue to unfold. For Annenberg Media, I'm Ryan Temple.
An outbreak of the West Nile virus in LA County has public health officials on the lookout. Reporter Claudia Buccio visited the LA Natural History Museum to learn more about mosquitoes, the transmitters of the disease.
We know that buzzing sound all too well. Memories of an itchy mosquito bite might come to mind, but for the LA County Public Health Department, the buzz is around the West Nile virus. In 2017, there have been more than 220 cases of people infected in LA County. 16 have died. These numbers have been rising for the last 5 years, and this year was substantially higher than 2016. The key to avoiding West Nile virus is prevention. That is Brian Brown. He is a curator of entomology at the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles. Brown studies a computer screen of his powerful digital microscope. What looks like a tiny mosquito to the naked eye, on the screen he sees long legs and wings covered with scales. The heat wave has caused an increase in the number of mosquitoes who also thrive in moisture. Brown says,
well, generally the wettest months of the year are when we have the most mosquito danger because, again, there's rain and filling little containers of water in which mosquitoes can breed. Also because of our year-round irrigation, we have the possibility of having mosquitoes more and longer periods here.
Brown says you should not leave any containers of water sitting around.
Especially not huge swimming pools or buckets or anything like that full of water, because mosquitoes can breed very quickly in abandoned water receptacles. You want to keep your backyard dry. If you have overhead sprinklers, things that spray water up in the air, make sure there's no pots or anything in which the water can catch and stay for any period of time.
Brown says people should cover up.
Especially in areas around where the outbreak occurred, they should wear repellent on exposed areas of skin. And basically just be aware, if you're getting mosquito bites and you're not protected, then remove yourself from that area.
The West Nile virus can cause a range of symptoms.
A few will develop some flu-like symptoms. A very few will be damaged. And very, very, very few could potentially die from bites of those mosquitoes.
Public health officials say to look out for fever, muscle weakness, stiff neck, or rash. And if necessary, call your doctor. I don't know about you, but I think I'll follow my mom's advice and start carrying a repellent with me. Better safe than sorry. For Annenberg Media, I'm Claudia Buccio.
USC's Chief Student Health Officer Sarah Van Orman says the USC community is at low risk of getting the West Nile virus, but she advises students, faculty, and staff to take precautions around mosquitoes. The new Crenshaw Metro line has brought a lot of changes to South LA. That includes the West Adams neighborhood that borders the north side of the tracks. Intersection South LA reporters Tatum Johnson and Jordan Hunter asked residents how they and their community have been impacted.
We have noticed a lot of the houses and structures around the neighborhood being remodeled and purchased after like being bought at a cheaper price and, you know, being fixed up and rented out a lot more expensive.
Rent is very high, astronomical. People who have vouchers, they have to move now. Trying to get rid of all low-income housing. That's the biggest issue around here. Rent is unbelievable.
It used to be like one-family homes or whatever. What it's forcing people to do is have like 10 people living in one house trying to make the mortgage, and that's a whole lot of change.
Yeah, they're actually trying to buy our house too. Yeah, there have been people coming up like every couple months, you know, and then I have family that stays around here, so they've been trying to, yeah, they're trying to buy this out.
In 2016, West Adams ranked the 9th most competitive home buying market in the country, according to real estate website Redfin. Houses in the neighborhood sell almost twice as fast as the average home in the LA metro area. This is a second in a four-part series on gentrification from different neighborhoods in South LA. In just 2 months, the recreational sale of marijuana will become legal in California. Today, the LA City Council approved a draft ordinance that will govern how marijuana businesses will get licensed in the city. The ordinance also details security and operation requirements. The City Council also wants to help people who are convicted of drug-related crimes profit from the recreational cannabis industry. Aurora Percanella has a story.
Legal marijuana is a business valued at $7 billion per year in the state of California. The city of LA wants to ensure that the benefits are distributed equitably as the state heads toward complete legalization by January 2018. Decades of cannabis prohibition disproportionately affected Black and Latino communities. Drug-related arrests were endemically concentrated in poorer pockets of the city, such as Watts and South LA. Kat Packer is executive director of the city's Department of Cannabis Regulation.
Here in the state of California, just in 2015 alone, African Americans were 2 times more likely to be arrested for a marijuana misdemeanor and 5 times more likely to be arrested for a marijuana felony.
Packer thinks that LA now has the opportunity to redress this imbalance and set an example for the rest of the country. The LA City Council met on Monday to listen to arguments that people and communities that disproportionately suffered from the war on drugs should be offered a privileged pathway to participate in the recreational marijuana business. This is similar to affirmative action, but it's based on income and previous arrests rather than race. California prohibits preferential treatment based on race. Clifton Albright owns a law firm that specializes in helping cannabis business owners from affected areas succeed. He's been a supporter of what authorities call social equity program from the very beginning.
The social equity program makes sure that everyone has an opportunity to participate in the cannabis sales, cultivation, and manufacturing. And I think that's going to give a significant benefit to those communities and the people in those communities who are most impacted.
At the City Council meeting, Donnie Anderson was among the pro-cannabis audience that welcomed the plan enthusiastically.
It's victorious to me. It means that every other state will look at LA and start implementing.
Anderson chairs the local NAACP Cannabis Task Force. His partner, Virgil Grant, has been in the cannabis industry for many years. He represents the pro-marijuana legislation Southern California Coalition.
I've owned one of the first shops in the history of medical marijuana south of the 10 freeway in Los Angeles.
For Grant, the new program follows the 6 years he spent in federal prison on cannabis-related charges. The social equity program won't just have a positive impact on the individual lives of people like Virgil Grant. Los Angeles will also commit to reinvest 20% of the tax revenue from marijuana businesses into services and revitalization in some of the most affected communities. City Council President Wesson said it's a way for people who've paid a high price for this business to get a seat at the table as the industry transitions into legality. For Annenberg Media, I'm Aurora Percanella.
Now, it's time for Ampersand.
Ampersand.
Radio.
Covering Los Angeles arts and culture, and everything in between.
In the 1970s, punk rock landed in Los Angeles. The Grammy Museum is honoring that short but storied history with Exhibit X, 40 Years of Punk in Los Angeles. It celebrates X, one of the most influential bands of the local punk scene. But what does it mean to put punk artifacts in a museum? Does that mean punk is a thing of the past? Ampersand reporter Rosemary Alejandrino spoke to members of the band at the exhibit's opening to find out.
This song is called Los Angeles, written and performed by X, one of the bands that shaped the music and culture of the 1970s LA punk scene. The Grammy Museum in downtown LA seems like an odd place to hold an exhibit for a punk band, but the exhibit tries to be as do-it-yourself as the scene that birthed punk rock. Each of X's 4 members was given a 7-foot-tall glass case to fill with artifacts from the band's early years. Guitars, buttons, posters, and the very notebook in which the song Los Angeles was composed. As Exene Cervenka, one of X's lead vocalists, looks at her personal items on display at the museum, she says that punk blossomed for a moment.
And it was like a quick hit and run kind of thing, and it was fun and it was wild and nobody knew what to expect next. It was really easy to live here then. Rent was nothing, cars were nothing, guitars cost nothing. Everything was like $5 to get in. That was a moment I think won't come again, just because it was all word of mouth. There was no internet. You had a phone in the house if you were lucky. You just got in the car, went to somebody's house and said, hey, I bought a record, you want to hear it?
Yes. That loud, rambunctious spirit of punk has always been difficult to contain. It spilled out of nightclubs and echoed in car radios across Los Angeles and eventually across America. So the idea of containing punk within an institution like a museum feels almost counterintuitive, which is something that X's other lead vocalist, John Doe, addresses at a press conference in front of his portion of the exhibit. He's standing an uncomfortable distance from the reporters as he describes what it's like to see his stuff behind glass.
It's weird. It's very strange. My stuff doesn't qualify for being in a museum, but evidently at this point, after 40 years, it does. So it's, as you can imagine, odd, somewhat surreal.
But being in the presence of the band's actual personal belongings doesn't totally capture the gritty authenticity that X's music conveys. While the exhibit is meant to be a sign of the time, a tribute to the 70s punk scene, it doesn't feel like you're being transported to a dirty basement in Hollywood Boulevard. It feels more like a Hard Rock Cafe, framed posters and mannequins wearing memorabilia, the exact opposite of punk. While looking around the museum, the band seems shocked that they are being honored by the show, let alone to still be playing music together 40 years later. Cervenka seems wistful thinking about all the things she's lost that she could have put in her case.
It also makes you feel like, wow, I didn't know that I was going to still be here. I would have kept some things, or I wouldn't have, you know what I mean? Like, I gave a lot of things to charity for auctions. I think it's enough, though, for people to get an idea of what it was like, and that's cool.
The exhibit gives you an idea of what LA punk was like in the 1970s, but physical objects from times past can't fully capture the spirit of a scene. For lead singer Doe, there's a magic in the passing of time.
And that's the beauty of a scene. It's there for a moment, and then see you later.
In talking to the members of X, the ones who lived through that crazy, chaotic, and definitive time, you realize that you just had to be there. If you want to see them live, you can catch them at the Novo on November 22nd. Otherwise, the exhibit will be at the Grammy Museum until March 2018. For Annenberg Media, I'm Rosemary Alejandrino.
If you've ever wondered about the origins of curious words and phrases, here's Michael Loy with today's root source.
Why is the word Mayday a call for disaster?
Mayday! Mayday!
Mayday! Mayday, what the hell is that?
Mayday? Why, that's the Russian New Year. You know, we'll have a big parade and we'll serve hot hors d'oeuvres.
The word has been around since 1923. Frederick Stanley Mockford, a radio officer, made up the word. He took it from the French word m'aide, which means help me. Mockford wanted the word to be easily heard on all radio channels. The traditional SOS code was hard to understand because the S sound on air is confusing. The m'aide call is made by saying the word three times in a row, followed by the problem. But if you're on a ship, don't make a false m'aide call to the Coast Guard. That could cost you up to $250,000 and 6 years in the slammer. For Edinburgh Media, I'm Michael Loy.
That's it from Where We Are Today. Today's show was produced by Garrett Schwartz. Alex Barnum contributed to today's reporting. Chris Perfett is our board operator. The theme music was composed by Derek Renfro. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Edinburgh Media. I'm Charlotte Kim. Thank you.
Thank you.